You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball. Join Andy and Patrick weekly as they bring you up to date on all things Ute.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Ute Talk. It is Monday, November 21st, and this is episode 22. My name is Andy, and I hope you all are doing well. Thank you for joining us. I am joined by my co-host and writer for Torn by Sports Network, Patrick. How are we doing today, Patrick?
Pretty somber on this rainy day after a rough weekend.
Yes, very, very rough. The rains today definitely showed the gloom in Ute fans, I'm sure. So thank you, everybody, for tuning into the show. If this is your first time, welcome. Ute Talk is part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. And we produce this twice a week for your enjoyment. So please add us to your favorite RSS feed, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, iTunes. And you can also follow us at Ute Talk Podcast. So let's get right into it here. Excuse me. Our news, Ute News of the Week. Running Utes had two games last week. Tuesday against Concordia, Oregon, and Friday against, Coppin State. And Utes won both of those games. Concordia, they won 96-53. Coppin State, 94-51. And I'm sorry, that one was actually on Saturday, not Friday. I apologize. And we'll dive deep into those here momentarily after we get through our Ute news. But two wins last week. Next matchup for the Utes is on the 25th, which is Friday against UC Riverside. Injury report. Patrick, what do you got for us as far as injuries go?
Cody Barton, Utes linebacker, is going to be out for the season. Looks like he broke his collarbone on Saturday against Oregon. Mm-hmm. I know he... You know, he had 20 tackles in that game, but he did have a rough game tackling, but he was the Utes leading tackler, and he was all over the place. It wasn't for lack of trying, but he's had kind of a rough season on the tackling front, but I think, you know, wish him well, and hopefully he'll get well soon and be able to return next season and work on some fundamental things and become that much better for the Utes next season.
Absolutely. Ray Guy finalist, another Ute, 3 years in a row, hopefully. Mitch Wisnowski is one of the finalists for the top punters in the college football. As we all know, Tom Hackett won it 2 years in a row, so hopefully Mitch can make it a three-peat for the Utes.
Yeah, Wisnowski's been great all season. Not really much of a drop-off from Hackett. And he'll just continue to get better. He's a great punter, has a big leg, and has really helped the Utes and put them, you know, giving them some good field position.
Yeah.
Throughout the season, so hopefully he'll be able to bring home that hardware.
Yeah, absolutely. And then as far as our rankings go, college football playoff comes out tomorrow, Tuesday, but Utes dropped to number 21 in the AP and 20 in the coaches poll. Washington sits at 6-5, respectively. Colorado is at 9, USC 12, and Washington State at 23. So Utah still ranked. I would expect them to still be ranked once the college football playoff polls come out tomorrow. But Oregon, that Oregon game really stung.
Yeah, that Oregon game really hurt, especially when you think of going into this weekend against Colorado. You could have, you know, pretty much a matchup between number 9 and, you know, maybe number 8 or number 10, mm-hmm. depending on, you know, if Colorado jumped Utes with their victory over Washington State. But, man, it's tough. That really hurts. That was, you know, a game I was looking forward to, a big game with a lot on the line, and mm-hmm. here we are.
Yeah, here we are. So we'll get into Utah football here a little later. Let's recap our running Utes. First, Concordia and Coppin State. So Concordia was Tuesday night. Utah pretty much blew them out, controlled the game from the get-go. Final score 96-53. So you've got a 43-point victory there. The Utes looked a lot better than they did their first game of the season, so that was nice to kind of get some of their jitters out. Bonham really played well, 17 points on 6 of 8 shooting. Devin Daniels had a really good all-around game, 10 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks in 23 minutes. So not a bad game for Devin Daniels right there. Parker Van Dyke, shooting-wise, really played well, or shot the ball well, 15 points, 6 of 10, 3 of 6 from the 3, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal. And Kuzma kind of bringing in the scoring there, 13 points, 8 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal. So Kuzma is still going to be your lead dog, probably followed by Bonham. Those two might interchange, you know, a game here and there. And then I would look at, you know, probably Van Dyke or Daniels as for right now as being that third scorer. Once Bearfield comes into the mix in December, I would imagine Bearfield would be kind of that 2-3 scorer. So, but overall, good game. Rawson got in and got some minutes and played really well, 12 points, 7 boards. So a lot to like, a lot of improvement over the first game. Against Northwest Nazarene. Utes looking good on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I like the way that they're looking, and I like that how they're taking care of business and getting, you know, some of these inexperienced guys some playing time. That's only going to help as they get into, you know, the heart of Pac-12 play and the rest of the season. But looks like, you know, they're a fairly well-balanced team, you know, had a lot of people in that game in double figures, and Looked like they've found a 3-point threat in Parker Van Dyke, and, you know, just looks like the coming of, you know, a pretty well balanced team that could maybe make some noise.
Absolutely. And I kind of feel like the running Utes are a little reminiscent of the Detroit Pistons in 2004. You know, no particular scorer or big time player, you know, everybody can do a little bit of something, and you know, you'll probably have a player that gets hot here and there depending on the game, but you know, overall, I mean, against Concordia you had what, 2, 4, 5, 7 players in double digits, you know, so and getting a lot of experience for those players. Once Collette and Bearfield come to the mix, players like Devin Daniels and Rawson, who are kind of starting right now, they'll move to your bench, and then you got Bearfield and Collette playing, and so you'll have some good experience coming off the bench, which will be nice for the Utes.
Yeah, I mean, they have all the makings of a team that, you know, could do fairly well in conference play, and maybe even come up with some upsets, and you know, hopefully they'll be able to make the tournament and make a little run.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, Utes beat Concordia Oregon Cavaliers 96-53. The next game that Utes played was Saturday against Coppin State. Coppin State actually previously the night before had played BYU. And Utah beat Coppin State by more than what BYU did. So I guess that means that Utah would beat BYU this year. That's how BYU fans look at it, right?
Exactly.
So Coppin State came into the game 0-4. Running Utes gave them their 5th loss. You know, Coppin State isn't a huge player. You know, they play in, let's see, I believe the MEAC conference. So they got a few other, you know, let's see, like Savannah State made the tournament last year. Hampton, I believe, made it the year before or last year. I can't remember, one of the two, but Hampton was in it. I believe it was a play-in game. Nonetheless, Utah beats Coppin State 94-51. Again, Bonham leading the way. with 19 points. So he's really showing his aggressive nature that we didn't see in that Nazarene game. You've got this one, you only had four players in double digits, down from the seven that we saw on Tuesday. But a lot of players got some points and got into the mix. So, I mean, you had a total of, 12. I mean, Coach K went 12 deep on his roster. So, with Mark Reiniger getting 6 minutes as the lowest amount. So, really, everybody played a little bit and got involved and kind of got their feet wet. JoJo Zamora played really well in the game on Saturday. 22 points, 2 steals, 2 assists, 3 rebounds, 3 of 6 from three-point land. Jake Connor showing the range, 3 of 4 with 11 points. Parker Van Dyke again, 3 of 7, 15 points. So again, kind of everybody getting involved a little bit. You know, Rawson, another good game as far as statistics go. He didn't put up a lot of points. He was 2 of 7, only had 6 points. But he had 1 block, 6 assists, and 12 rebounds. I mean, that's not bad for your power forward.
No, not at all. And these, I mean, these aren't big name schools that they're beating, but they're important games. And, you know, with the Utes taking care of business like they are, it shows, you know, that they're a pretty good team. But these games are important too, you know, with especially with having all these new guys. These games are important to, you know, get guys in there, give this team time to gel, give them playing experience, let them get comfortable with one another, and then that's just going to make them that much better for when the, you know, conference play rolls around. So these games are important, and it's important that, you know, the Utes blow these teams out like they're doing and get a bunch of players playing time. And I'm excited for this team this year to see what they can do in the Pac-12.
Absolutely. So big game coming up this weekend, the 25th, which is, that game is Friday night at 7 p.m. Against UC Riverside. So again, Friday night, November 25th, 7 p.m., UC Riverside. Utah will go head-to-head against them. UC Riverside currently sitting at 1-2 overall. Utah is 3-0 overall. You know, really, Utah should really have no problem with these guys. Every statistical category, Utah is beating them by, you know, I mean, points per game, 90 to 71, points allowed, 47 to 65. Field goal percentage is, you know, about 10% higher. Rebounds, about 15 more rebounds, 8 more assists. So really, the running Ute shouldn't have any issues with UC Riverside coming in on Friday.
Yeah, hopefully they can take care of business like they've been doing against this team. And then I think their true first test is going to be that Butler game.
Monday night.
That's going to be a real test for them. Mm-hmm. Butler, I think, is undefeated right now as well. Mm-hmm. So hopefully both teams are undefeated. And that's going to be a game that really showcases what the Utes are all about, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, that should be a big game. So again, UC Riverside, Utes matchup Friday night, 7 p.m. Butler, and I guess we can preview Butler a little bit since that is on Monday night, which is when we regularly do the show. So Butler actually, let's see here. So Butler's sitting at 3-0, like Patrick had said. They've got wins against Northern Colorado Bears, 89-52. Win against Northwestern, 70-68. So that was a close one for them. And then a win against Bucknell, the Bison, 86-60. So Butler currently sitting at 3-0. They have a game tonight against Norfolk State Spartans, and then Thursday against Vanderbilt. So two tough games for them. You know, Vandy's not a bad opponent at all. And then they come into the Huntsman Center on Monday night. So you know, Butler should be a really big opponent for the Utes, really kind of test our mettle, if you will, and see what we can do with this roster against some big name guys.
Yeah, that's a game that I think is going to be an exciting game, and it'll be a good game and a good test for the Utes. And, you know, it'll definitely be a better test than, you know, these first few games that they have played. So
sure,
it's definitely going to show what they're all about, because, you know, Butler typically fields a pretty good team and mm-hmm. each year. And I know they're well coached. And so it'll be a battle, but it'll be a good test for them.
Yeah. Butler plays in a big conference too, the Big East. Villanova, Xavier, Creighton, Seton Hall, Butler, DePaul, Providence, St. John's, Marquette, and Georgetown. So we play Monday against Butler, and then we go on the road. Let's see, our first road game, December 10th, against Xavier, which that'll be another big test. So it'll be really interesting to see what Utah can do against Butler and see how we match up. That'll give us, I think, a fairly good insight into kind of what the rest of the season holds, you know, as far as going against some tougher schemes and bigger players. So, well, moving right along here as we are done with our running Utes recap and previews. Let's get into our Ute Qs.
Now time for Ute Qs, where we take your questions from Twitter and email and we answer them weekly. Tweet us at Ute Talk Podcast or email utetalk@gmail.com.
Alrighty, so for those of you that do not know what our Ute Qs segment is, we love your participation, so please tweet us at Ute Talk Podcast or email us utetalk@gmail.com and use the hashtag Ute Qs, so hashtag UTEQS. We will ask some questions to you guys. We want your answers. If you have any questions that you want us to answer for you, let us know. We'll happy to answer them on the show and then get your feedback. So first one, and we can dive into this a little bit. We had asked the rough weekend, heartbreaker for the Utes. As a fan, is the season now a disappointment, or will you be satisfied with a 9-3, 8-4 record? At JD Haas, not what I was hoping for, but I would consider the entire season a disappointment either way. Very, very, very interesting take. You know, I mean, it's hard to call the entire season a disappointment. You know, obviously, as the season wore on and the games were played, you know, our expectations had changed. You know, we went from, okay, we're breaking in and, you know, offensive coordinator, we're breaking in, or excuse me, not an offensive coordinator, breaking in a defensive coordinator. We're breaking in, you know, a transfer quarterback, you know, the retiring of Joe Williams, the injuries, you know, expectations went up and down kind of those first 6, 7, 8 games. It's hard to call the whole season a disappointment. I think as the season went on, we got excited. Rose Bowl, you know, you could smell the roses. Miles away, you could smell the roses. It was right there within our graphs, and it always seems that, you know, when it's right there, something happens to the Utes that it's just not meant to be. Utah does get to play spoiler and essentially pick and choose who we want to go play in the Pac-12 championship. If we lose, it is Colorado. If we win, it's USC. I can't stand USC, so I'd hope that you know, USC or that we not that I hope that we lose, but I just can't stand USC. I don't want them to play. On the flip side of that, I also don't want Colorado to go to the Pac-12 game before us, because then that'll be every team in the Pac-12 is gone to the championship game, minus the Utes, which will not be fun. So I would say it's almost a mixed bag of emotions for me personally. Yeah, I'm satisfied with an 8-4 or a 9-4, 10-3 record, you know, just kind of with how the beginning of the season went on. But that November curse is killing us, and we've got to get it figured out.
Yeah, I think going into this season, you know, a lot of fans, their expectations were, you know, kind of right around that 9-3, 8-4 mark. I know at the beginning of the season, I picked them to go, I think I picked them 10-2.
Yep.
And some people even had them at one loss. I think you had them at one loss as well.
I did.
I didn't, you know, is 9-3. I mean, that's still a great record. 8-4 is still a great record, especially when you take into consideration all the injuries, all the stuff that went on, you know, Joe Williams, you know, breaking in a new defensive coordinator, like you said. It's just, you know, 9-3 is still a great season in the Pac-12. 8-4 is still a great season in the Pac-12. Anything outside of that, I think, would be disappointing as a fan and as a Utah team, because we know, you know, they're capable of being, you know, right up there at the top of the pack. But, you know, it's just, I think the disappointing thing is, you know, it was right there for them. And this past weekend against Oregon, you know, everything on the line, and it was right there, and they lost it, you know, by an inch. And mm-hmm. I think that's what's so disappointing, because it's also disappointing because it keeps happening every November.
Mm-hmm.
They keep, you know, being right there. It's right there, right within their grasp, and they just can't seem to get over that hump. And that's what I think fans are mostly disappointed about. But I mean, I'll take a 9-3, 8-4 season, especially this season with all the injuries, breaking in a new quarterback, you know, Joe Williams, the running back situation, breaking in a new receivers coach. You know, the Utes are right there. One of these seasons, they're going to get over that hump. Yeah. They keep bringing in good talent. They keep getting good recruits. And they, you know, they do have some great coaches. I know, you know, there's some questions on the offensive side as a coaching staff. But, you know, overall, you know, still a great season for the Utes. Just, you know, heartbreaking that they weren't able to finish it and get to where they, you know, eventually wanted to be, which was win in the South and then get into that Pac-12 game and eventually the Rose Bowl. But
yeah,
what can he do?
Yeah. Interesting stat. So if Utah beats Colorado on Saturday, we will have beat the other 5 South Division teams, but we will not be representing the South. How does that make sense in your mind? I mean, I understand that, you know, you're taking the conference record of, you know, Pac-12 games, but if you beat every other team in your division, you should be going to the Pac-12 game.
Exactly. That just doesn't make sense to me. If the winner's supposed to be coming out of your division and you're undefeated in that division, you're the team that should be going regardless of,
yeah,
you know, your overall record, because you're essentially the winner of that division. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And to have a team like, you know, I hope the Utes win this weekend, but then to have a team like USC, who the Utes beat, I mean, this is the second year in a row the Utes have handed USC the title mm-hmm. game. And
yeah,
it's just, I don't know, it's just disappointing. I can't stand USC.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And yeah, I just can't get over it. But some tough losses this year, you know, 1 yard, 1 inch, and then, you know, 3 blocks in the back from being undefeated at this point in time. And I think that's what kind of makes, you know, Ute fans a little bit bitter, is kind of just how these games are ending that we're losing. You know, Cal, one of the worst defenses in the Pac-12 and the nation, and we barely put up, you know, 20-plus points. Oregon, again, we're one of the worst defenses in the country, and we put up 28 points when other teams are putting up 50. Washington. Washington is a great team. And you know, who they still probably possibly would have beaten us, but the blocks in the backs that were not called were for obviously detrimental and played a role in the ending score. So I, you know, and that negativity is kind of what, you know, we as human nature, we dwell on, you know, it's like that, you know, customer service, you're going to hear one positive for about the 10 negatives that you hear, you know, same type of, situation, as a sports fan.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so disappointing to lose to teams like, you know, Cal and Oregon are essentially the same type of team.
Mm-hmm.
They have a high scoring offense, horrible defense, and you could throw Arizona State in the mix with that as well. And it just seemed like the Utes struggled with those teams this season. And, it kind of, you know, kind of what we talked about before, the Utes kind of play down to their competition. They play up against Washington State and, you know, play great against USC, Washington State. And then, you know, they play down to, you know, Cal or Oregon State or Oregon or Arizona State's level. And it just doesn't work that way. But this, I mean, the loss against Oregon, and even Cal, those two losses are two losses that shouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
The Utes, their offensive game plan for both of those games, it was horrible. It just seems like they were out there just going through the motions, just trying to, you know, rather than playing to win, they were just trying to go through the motions and get a victory, and it just doesn't work that way in the Pac-12.
They were playing not to lose.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it never seems to work out, and that's the frustrating thing. And I think it's for all Utah teams, you know, MLS, you know, Real and
Jazz.
Utah Jazz, yep. Playing down to the competition, you know, whether it's the kids, the coaches, whoever it might be, they get up for those big name schools or the big name teams. But you know, you leave it to the games that you should win easily, and you know, everything just falls apart.
Yeah, which is another thing is, you know, this Oregon game, there was so much on the line for this game, and that team, they just looked so unmotivated.
Yeah.
On Saturday, they just looked like they didn't even want to be there, and I put that all on the coaches. They got to have these guys prepared and up for these games. I mean, that was a huge game. That was a game that could take your school to the next level, mm-hmm. And they just looked like, you know, they would rather be anywhere else.
At home, nonetheless, with, you know, what, 4 or 5 recruits visiting?
Senior day.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you're not up for that game. You know, I mean, this loss to Oregon is probably is just as bad as when we went into Autzen Stadium last year and beat them by 42.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, the scores are not the same, but we absolutely crushed Oregon, and from that point on, the rest of their season was pretty dismal. This year, Oregon comes back, beats us on a heartbreaker, great pass by Herbert, great, you know, 1 foot in the end zone by Carrington, but this one probably hurts just as bad to us as Utah's punch in the face to them last year. Would you agree?
I totally agree that, and you know, Oregon, like we talked about last week, a lot of people were picking the Utes to blow this team out, and
mm-hmm.
That's why I posted that Twitter question, you know, does this game scare you? And you know, honestly, it's a game that scared me because Oregon's coming in, nothing to lose, want revenge for next season. And I didn't expect them to come in and, you know, blow out the Utes or anything, but I knew they were going to come in and make a game of it. And, you know, the Utes games are always close.
Mm-hmm.
The only, you know, game I've ever felt comfortable with in the past, like 10 years was the Oregon game last season, but, and maybe the first quarter of the Las Vegas Bowl against BYU.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I knew Oregon was going to come in and take it to the Utes. I mean, these are still 4 and 5 star guys who, They're just having a down season.
Absolutely.
But in the Pac-12, any team on any given week can beat you. And Oregon showed that on Saturday. And it's just so disappointing because it was right there. It was such a big game. And they just choked.
Yep. Straight up choked. Alrighty, well, thank you at JD Haas for your response there. We'll move on to our next UQ question. So our question was, give us your score and MVP for the rivalry game. No responses back to that one, unfortunately. I think a lot of Ute fans quit Twitter and didn't want anything to do with what next week entails.
And they might not think that Utes can beat Colorado.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the frustrating part is I could totally see Utah coming out next week and just blowing the doors off of Colorado. Even though Colorado leads or is a very good defensive efficiency team, you know, and I think holds teams to about 160-something passing yards, I could just see Utah like, we feel like playing this game and let's score 30, 40 points, you know?
Yeah, come out like, you know, treat them like they did Oregon last season and come out and unleash the whole playbook and
exactly
beat them by, you know, 20, 30 points.
Yeah. So what's your score and your MVP for the rivalry game, the Rumble in the Rockies in Colorado?
You know, I can see the Utes playing spoiler. I'd love the Utes to play spoiler like Colorado did the first season of the Pac-12 for the Utes, mm-hmm. where the Utes were going to the had a chance to go to that mm-hmm. title game and Colorado came in. Colorado's horrible and the Utes couldn't get the job done at home. I can see the Utes playing spoiler. I'm gonna go give it 28-27 for the Utes.
Ooh.
Close game, good defensive battle. I'm going to give the game ball to Joe Williams.
28-27 Utes. Game ball to Joe Williams. I think I've got to do something pretty close to that. You know, I'm thinking more along the lines of maybe a 24-21 Utah's favor. Game ball going to Phillips with the field goal kick. So we'll see how that plays out. Patrick, 28-27, game ball to Joe Williams. Andy, 24-21, game ball going to Andy Phillips, automatic Andy. So that is our – oh, do you have something to say there, Patrick?
No,
you're good. Okay. So that is our UQ segment. So, again, tweet us your questions at UTalk Podcast or email us utalk@gmail.com. And don't forget to use the hashtag UTQs. Hashtag UTEQS. So let's get into our next segment here. Recap of Utah football and Oregon. I know I was there at the stadium. You were in the hospital with with your wife and congratulations on your daughter.
Thanks.
Of course. So. You were watching it on your iPad. I was there in the stadium. What were kind of your thoughts starting with the game? I mean, first quarter 7-3, second quarter neither team scored. You know, you going into halftime 7-3 against Oregon.
Yeah, I mean 7-3. You know, the Utes come out. Corley Butler Bird, you know, has that great touchdown run that he had. Making all those moves, great blocking by the wide receivers. You know, the Utes hold a high-scoring offense such as Oregon to 3 points. But one thing that really bothered me about that first half is, you know, the Utes get the ball back with, I don't know what it was, like a little over a minute left to go, you know, before halftime.
Mm-hmm.
They have 3 timeouts left, and they essentially just don't do anything. They don't use any of their timeouts. They don't try to move the ball. They don't try to get into field goal range. They're content with going into halftime with a 7-3 lead on you know, one of the top scoring offenses in the country.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. You know, why not go for a field goal? Why not get some points on the board? I don't understand. And they do this all the time.
I was like, that's not the first time they've done it this year either.
I don't understand the saving of the timeouts. I understand if you're on defense, you don't want to stop the clock. But when you have the ball and there's a minute or two left, why not step on the gas? Use your timeouts. Try to get something out of it. I don't get that. The clock management, it always happens every season. And I just don't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's beyond frustrating. I mean, sitting in the stands, you know, I'm just screaming and yelling, like, why are we taking so long to get a play call? Why are we taking so long to get that play off? And then why are we not calling timeouts or getting the ball out of bounds?
Yeah, I think they used their first timeout with, like, I swear it was like 16 seconds
yeah.
left.
Yeah, it makes zero sense, the clock management. I mean, you've got a perfect opportunity to score something before you're going in, before halftime, where in the third quarter, you're getting the ball back because you deferred. You know, so you could literally go up within a couple minutes of the third quarter. You can go up, you know, you score a touchdown in each possession. You're up 21-3, you know, and Oregon probably that time is probably pretty defeated.
Yeah. And, you know, you're not going to be able to hold these guys to just 3 points. Mm. This isn't the Mountain West. This isn't the WAC. Teams in the Pac-12 can go up in the field at will and score in the blink of an eye.
Oh, yeah.
And
Cal, USC, all those guys.
I just don't think the coaching staff understands that yet. I don't understand what they're thinking in that situation. You got to get points on the board. You got to put these teams away early. Quit letting them hang around. Quit letting them, you know, be in the game. Put them away, and you know, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's a coaching issue, whether it's a philosophy or lack of trust in the players. What do you think it is? A mixture of both, or I mean, I personally cannot pinpoint it. I feel like we have a heck of a lot more talent than we have had any other year in the Pac-12, overall on offense. And yet it seems like there's no trust in the players to get the ball downfield, to, like you said, push the gas pedal, is it a lack of trust in the players or just straight up mismanagement of the clock and play calling?
I mean, play calling's a huge part of it, and it has been for, so long. The Utes are just not creative. They run the same, handful of plays every game. So predictable. But, I think a lot of it goes into they don't want to make mistakes. They don't want the players to make mistakes. Maybe they think, if these guys, get a turnover or they make a mistake, they're not going to be able to bounce back from it. But the Utes have shown, they had 6 turnovers against BYU. They still won the game. I mean, granted, it's BYU. But let these guys make mistakes and let them overcome adversity and win the games. I mean, this, I know turnover, you don't want to turn the ball over, but take some chances. You have to. It's just, and then I just don't get this. The saving of the timeouts happens so much with the Utes. If you have the ball, you have a chance to, you have a couple minutes left. You have a chance to drive down the field and maybe get a field goal. I mean, if you get a field goal to close out that half on Saturday, that last touchdown Oregon scores doesn't even matter because you win 31-30. And because you didn't even try, you essentially lost the game. I mean, who knows, maybe they wouldn't have gotten a field goal or even gotten any points, but it's just, take a chance.
You got to try. maybe that's what will happen next year. Kyle Whittingham was, willing to do the fourth down conversions this year. Maybe next year it'll be figuring out the play clock or the game clock management.
Yeah. And I mean, we can go back to the play calling. So uncreative. They don't use any of their weapons like they should. I mean, Butler Bird gets the ball one time and then he's done for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Never go back to him. Never use Troy McCormick, who they praise all, fall camp, all spring camp. Never use him. I don't know if he's, I assume he's healthy. He's in uniform. you know, they go away from the run game that whole second half, basically. I don't even think they ran the ball in the fourth quarter. Passing game, receivers still, their receivers have improved, but they still have trouble getting open. I mean, every other team that they play in the Pac-12, their receivers are always wide open. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's the Utes' defensive scheme or whatnot, but our receivers are never open, ever, except for Raylon Singleton, that touchdown against Arizona State. That's the only time I've seen a wide receiver wide open for the Utes. But it's just, you know, they don't use their playmakers. The play calling is so predictable. They run the same plays all the time. It just, I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah, the play calling is extremely frustrating. You know, I believe there was a point. Let's see, I'm just looking at the stats here. One, two. Oh, let's see. Five. So far, Joe Williams, he ran the ball. (clears throat) 13 times in the second half. But I believe they're just kind of looking at it. There's a, he had 149 yards total. I mean, he was chewing up the Oregon's defense, and you know, he finished with 6.5 yards, average, one touchdown, 149 yards, 23 carries. So almost half his carries came, or I guess about half his carries came in the second half. But I mean, he was having no trouble getting through Oregon's line. So it just blows my mind that they went away from it. You know, because I believe there was a time there where 9-10 plays and he ran the ball once.
Yeah.
I mean, what, you're up, you're leading. You know, let's get Joe more involved, you know. And like you said, Corey Butler Bird, you know, he had 3 catches, 14 yards, and then the one, the reverse where he got the touchdown, 24 yards on that one carry for the touchdown. So it just seems like, okay, we're going to give our guys a quota. Once they hit that quota, you know, they can't touch the ball again.
Yeah. And it's the way they use Butler Bird. He's such a dynamic player. Mm-hmm. They could use him in so many ways. Like, I mean, you look at someone like, you know, Jabril Preppers in Michigan, or any of these other dynamic players that can, you know, that are guys that can do it all. And they just don't have like anything for him. They run these little dinky swing passes, you know, or these just plays that don't work to, you know, Butler Bird's advantage. I mean, that guy could line him up in the backfield. Mm-hmm. You could do so many things with him, and they just don't use they still struggle with utilizing the talent that they have. I mean, you can even go back to last season. I mean, Kenneth Scott was a great receiver. He was a great possession receiver. He was a great receiver who you could throw the ball up, he'd go and get it. Mm-hmm. And they'd run like 2-yard curls with them the whole time.
Yeah.
And they just always seem to have trouble utilizing their talent on offense, especially. But I mean, I don't want to pin the loss on the offense solely, because the defense was even worse than the offense on Saturday. Oregon was 575 total yards on them. Nobody could tackle.
Oh yeah. That
of
was,
course.
I was going to bring that up.
The defensive backs, the corners especially, were horrible. Giving up big plays.
Linebacker seemed out of position.
Yeah.
Almost every single play.
The defensive line really was a non-factor. And it just, you know, I mean, Justin Herbert was able to get big yards on these guys. And that guy's not fast. That guy's not, you know, Michael Vick or, you know, someone like that, LeVar Jackson. Mm-hmm. And he's out there. Nobody can bring him down. Nobody can tackle Royce Freeman. You know, the corners who are supposed to be the strong, one of the strong suits of the defense this season have been consistently bad all season in coverage, giving up big plays, giving up big touchdowns. I mean, linebackers started out good, but maybe that's because it was against, you know, SEU and BYU.
Yeah.
Ever since that, they've, you know, they've really struggled. I mean, Donovan Thompson, the freshman linebacker, he finally came in and started showing these guys how to tackle, and he hasn't even played all season.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it's such a weird game, and it just, it's so frustrating to even think about it.
A game of many frustrations for sure. Yeah. The tackling was, you just wanted to rip your hair out. And I can probably count about 10 different plays in my head where, whether we had the quarterback for a sack or a running back for a loss of yards, or even, you know, a receiver where we would tackle them, or, you know, touch them, you know, because we didn't tackle, we would touch them and they would just run for about another 5 to 15 yards, however, depending on the play. And they were just getting yardage, you know, yards after a catch or carries, and just willy-nilly just running down the field, breaking 3, 4, 5 tackles. And it was just frustrating to see, you know, this vaunted Utah defense at the beginning of the year, you know, essentially turn into Charmin soft toilet paper. You know, I mean, they were extremely soft. They, you know, they weren't even wrapping up. It was just like, oh, I'm gonna hit you with my shoulder pad and maybe you'll fall down. And it just was not happening. And it was just beyond frustrating. And, you know, there are many plays that we could have stopped them on a, you know, a third down, third and long, that, you know, we just let them get yards after the catch or carry.
Yeah.
Or contact, I guess.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong, Royce, I mean, Oregon has some good running back. I mean, Royce Freeman is a good running back. Their other running back is really good as well. And they do have some playmakers. And I mean, I don't blame this loss, you know, on the players. I want to blame this loss on the coaches, the guys who get paid, you know, 6, 7 figures. They did not have these guys prepared. They did not have a good game plan offensively. These guys were not motivated for this game. This is a game that these guys should have came out and just destroyed the Ducks like last season. Mm-hmm. They should have been so motivated for this game, and they just didn't seem that way. And the game plan offensively was horrible. The game plan defensively was horrible. It just was a poorly executed game on all levels. And, you know, I know they only lost by an inch, but you still lost the game, and essentially you lost out on going to the Pac-12, you know, win in the South if you could beat Oregon the following week, and going to the championship game and taking, you know, this team to that next level, getting over that hump. And it's so disappointing as a fan to see, but I know that, you know, the Utes, they'll bounce back. I know a lot of people right now are calling for like Whittingham's head and stuff.
Yeah, that's come on. Ridiculous.
You're not going to get a better coach at Utah than Kyle Whittingham. He is a great coach. Of course, you know, something needs to happen offensively where they can, you know, get on that same level as the rest of the Pac-12, get some creativity, you know, take some chances, you know, revamp the offense, you know, utilize their strengths and talents and abilities that they have, their playmakers that they have. And then on defense, you know, they gotta get better at, you know, covering the deep ball, not giving up big plays, big touchdowns, and they especially got to get better at tackling.
Absolutely. Well, I feel like we've beat this like a dead horse, this game. I mean, crushing loss, you know, a blow to Utah's Pac-12, you know, the goal, you know, getting to that Pac-12 game. You know, it's all but lost now. So all we can do is move on. We can play spoiler against Colorado. That'll get us a better bowl game. You know, and we'll just move on. We'll move on from there. So looking at our preview of Colorado, I mean, Colorado's looking good. 7-1 in conference, 9-2 overall. Lou Fow is playing some phenomenal football. You know, 1,800 1,800 yards, 10 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. You know, they've got Lindsey, their running back, 199 carries, 1,081 yards, 15 touchdowns. And then Fields, 43 receptions, 741 yards, 8 touchdowns. Currently, the spread is 11 points in Colorado's favor. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what Ute team we see. You know, if we see the one that, you know, plays well against top defense like Washington, or are we going to see the one that, you know, showed up against Oregon this last weekend?
Yeah, this is going to be a game. These two teams are, they're pretty evenly matched. They're fairly similar teams. They mm-hmm. both, they're both fairly balanced offensively. They both have, you know, pretty good defenses. I think Colorado's defense might be a little bit better than the Utes this season, but, and their offense might be a little bit better, but overall, fairly similar teams. Mm-hmm. It'll be a good game. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a good defensive battle. I don't expect anyone to blow anyone out. And especially, you know, I think the Utes could be able to squeak out a victory against this team. But I mean, Colorado's looked good this season. They've come on strong, come out of nowhere. Nobody really expected them to do this season, and mm-hmm. they're having a great season. But, you know, like we said before, hopefully the Utes can play spoilers. Colorado spoiled your season, you know, a few seasons ago when you first entered the Pac-12. You had that opportunity to go to the title game, and they spoiled that. Hopefully the Utes can come in, spoil their season, make this rivalry even better. And but, you know, tough. It's tough to think about how big this game could have been. You know, two top 10 teams, a lot on the line. It's just so frustrating and disappointing to think about. But hopefully the Utes will not hang their heads and not let, you know, the Oregon game get them down. And they'll come out firing on all cylinders and, you know, be able to beat this Buffalo team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you mentioned very similar types of teams. I mean, Utah points per game, about 31, Colorado 35. Points allowed, 23 for Utah, 18 for Colorado. So very similar there. you know, a couple points here and there. Total yardage, 435 for the Utes, 478 for Colorado. Yards allowed, 387 for Utah, 322 for Colorado. Again, very, very similar teams. Fairly, very balanced as well. You know, Colorado's it's sitting at about 268 passing, 209 rushing. Utah's 222 passing, 213 rushing. So very similar, you know, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they shape up on Saturday. I know Lufau went out with an injury a little bit. I don't believe he came back into the game. He went out with an injury. I think he'll be back for the game on Saturday against the Utes. And that game is Saturday the 26th, 5:30 p.m. And that is on...
It's on Fox.
Fox, yeah, regular Fox. So maybe they're rethinking that now.
yeah.
So what, I mean, anything else you can tell us about... you know, Colorado, I mean, they've had some big wins, some interesting wins. You know, I mean, their scoring has kind of been all over the place. I mean, they beat Stanford 10-5.
Yeah.
You know, and then they go out against, you know, Washington State this last week, 38-24, Arizona the week before that, 49-24, UCLA 20-10. So their scoring has kind of been up and down, but, defensively they've held their opponents quite nicely. You know, Utah, you know, the last opponent we held under 20 points was Oregon State back on October 15th. So nothing to write home about there.
yeah. Colorado, their defense is strong. They have really good defensive backs, NFL type guys there at corner. And you know, their pass defense is really good. I think they're holding teams on average to about 190 yards passing. So, you know, the Utes passing game has improved, but it's still not quite where it needs to be. But, you know, rushing wise, I think the Utes should be able to move the ball. Joe Williams should be able to get his, you know, 120, 130 yards against this team. And by the way, he did go over 1,000 yards.
So. He did. And that's with missing four games.
Yeah. So good for him. That's a big accomplishment.
Unreal, man. That storyline is just unbelievable. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and then also Hunter Dimick in that Oregon game. I know he did get that sack record. So good for him, and congratulations on that. That's awesome. That guy's a workhorse, and he deserves that. But I think, you know, the Utes are going to come out. I mean, they're going to – I think you're going to see a lot of Joe Williams this game. I think he's going to get about 30, probably 30-plus carries. I think you'll see kind of maybe a grinded-out approach from the Utes, but I think this is going to be a real defensive battle, which whatever defense plays better, that team's going to be the victor.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Joe Williams, I mean, you know, they could be wanting to showcase some of these underclassmen and, seniors going into potential NFL draft gradings. I mean, you've got, you know, Joe Williams is a senior who's been talked about recently, making a big impact for the Utes and how that might translate to the NFL if he's interested in that. Marcus Williams might jump ship. He's had a decent season up until this last half.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, about the first six games were pretty darn good. You know, he was obviously out for what, two games, one and a half, I think.
Yeah, I think two.
So, but I mean, he just hasn't looked quite the same. You know, he's made some big stops, but, you know, Garrett Bowles, I know a lot of people are already counting him out. I don't know how, NFL teams feel about taking him, you know, JUCO prospect for 2 years, you know, 1 year at Division I football. You know, it's he's got the athleticism and, you know, the skills are all there, but is a team willing to take him with only 1 year at Division I college football?
Yeah, they could be willing to roll that dice. I don't foresee him coming back next season, but I mean, you never know. And I think there'll be a lot of scouts at this game, and you also have Lowell.
Yeah, Lowell.
Who could leave after the season. You know, he hasn't had the most productive season. He's been banged up, so I hope he comes back, but, you know, he's someone who could leave as well. Other than that, there's really...
I mean, how interesting would it be if none of those guys went? I mean, minus Joe Williams, because he's a senior, but, I mean, that would be a pretty good returning class for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wouldn't hurt. I mean, having Lowell return and you get Kylie Fitz to come back next season and replace Hunter Dimick along that line, and then you have all those young guys who are going to be really good. And then the offensive line, a lot of those guys are graduating, so I mean, if Bowles came back, that would only help that offensive line out quite a bit. So, you know, but those guys are going to do what's best for them. They'll get whatever their draft grades or whatever, their projections, and, you know, talk it over with their families and then, you know, make that decision.
Definitely.
And you can't, you know, question a guy who, you know, maybe he gets graded out in the second round, but he doesn't get drafted till the fifth. You're still going to be on a roster and, you know, living the dream, making some good money, playing football. So it's going to be interesting to see this, you know, what happens with the Utes this next week, and then, you know, see what bowl game they go to, and then eventually see who comes back, who leaves, who transfers. They got a lot of good young talent coming in on the recruiting front, you know, a lot of good talent that came in this past season as well. So it's going to be, I think you know, the Utes are going to be fine. They just got to get the offense figured out, and, you know, if that means getting a new offensive coordinator, I don't know. I like the consistency of it. I just think they need to maybe do away with the co-OCs and have one guy do it. But one thing I think they need to do, they definitely got to bring in a QB coach.
Yeah.
The QB progression over the past, you know, without having an actual QB coach who's played QB, has just not been good. I mean, Troy Williams has been pretty good this season, but I think he could be so much better than he is. So if they could get a good QB coach or whatnot to come in, or they just got to figure it out.
Absolutely. Now, before we head off for the night here, looking at the potential bowl game projections, right now, Utah potentially for the Foster Farms Bowl, which would be in Santa Clara, Levi Stadium, December 28th, Utah versus Indiana from the Big Ten.
That sucks.
Yeah, that sucks. Going from, you know, potential Michigan or Ohio State in the Rose Bowl to Indiana.
Is Indiana even ranked?
Yeah. No, they're yeah. Yeah, that one hurts. The other one was the Holiday Bowl, December 27th in San Diego, and that one was Utah versus Minnesota.
Yeah. Ouch.
Again, ouch, exactly. so interesting. I'm trying to find here. Let's see.
As long as it's not the Vegas Bowl versus BYU again, that's fine.
That's right. None of that, please. Let's not go to the Vegas Bowl at all. 3 years in a row would be way too much. So Indiana, their record is, let's see. Well, currently they're sitting at 5-6. So they need to win this next week and able to be bowl eligible. Minnesota is sitting at 8-3 overall. So I'd much rather have Minnesota, because at least it's not a team that's barely bowl eligible.
Yeah.
But yeah, both those games are just complete bummer from what it could have been. And it it hurts.
It's even more depressing now that you brought that up.
I apologize. I apologize, Ute Nation. Yeah, so that's kind of what we're looking at now. You know, obviously, depending on how Colorado goes in this next week, will dictate, you know, where we go. And it's a plus or minus on where the teams finish, right? So, you know, you go top to bottom, one through, you know, however many teams are bowl eligible. And that bowl can take a plus or minus one in either direction, to be in their bowl game. So we might be in some others. Just depends on what bowls like us, I guess. So but that's all we've got for Ute Talk today. So thank you everybody for listening to Ute Talk. For our audio engineer Marty, Patrick, and I'm Andy, we will see you next time, and as always, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.